Apologize that we're getting a later start today. We are going to first talk about let me look here. I'm looking for Claudia. Claudia, which bill number is it? 2490. Okay, that's what I thought. I wanted to make sure. Okay, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2490. Representative Cruz, if you want to come up, we want to accommodate you, and then we'll, Representative Avakian will get right to you as soon as we're done. Representative Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Jeff Cruz, State Representative, District 7. My first time before you this session, so I've been a stranger in this room.
We appreciate that.
Oh, I'm sure you do.
How lucky can we be?
But you're welcome to come down and help us on health care anytime you would like. First, just a note, this bill, and I appreciate Representative Shetterly allowing us to use his bill as a vehicle. This was something we thought we had taken care of pre-session, and then it turned out we didn't, and somehow it kind of slipped under the radar. But this bill is relating to children of incarcerated parents and the project that we have ongoing on that. Currently, there are more than 20,000 children in Oregon with a parent in prison. 41% of the current foster care population has a parent who is or was involved with the Oregon Department of Corrections. Children with an incarcerated parent are many times more likely to someday become incarcerated themselves. House Bill 2490, as amended, will support the Children of Incarcerated Parents Project Workgroup's efforts to continue to improve the health and well-being of these children in five areas of the criminal justice system, including arrest, judicial proceedings, jails, prisons, and transition back to the community. We supported this effort last time. We continue to support the efforts of the Children of Incarcerated Parents Project and continuing to develop recommendations that help all levels of the criminal justice system enhance services to these children. What is good for our children is good for society. This is crime prevention at its most basic level. I urge the committee to act favorably upon this piece of legislation. I'd be willing to answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative Cruz. We appreciate you coming in and giving us your testimony on the bill. And colleagues, if you're following along, this is essentially a gut and stuff of House Bill 2490, which Representative Shetterly determined was no longer necessary because of a recent Court of Appeals determination, which made the bill as a vehicle with the right relating clause available to take the amendments that Representative Cruz has essentially testified to, which it would be the substance of the bill. Are there questions for Representative Cruz?
I'd just like to say, Mr. Chair, that we talk a lot about prevention in this building, and this is prevention at its most basic level.
Well, we appreciate, again, Representative Cruz, your efforts on this issue. And the committee had an opportunity, I think most everybody here on the committee had an opportunity to visit the Coffee Creek facility earlier in the session. We had a presentation by some of the inmates who talked to us about the program and the impact that they felt like it was having in strengthening their relationships with their children and modifying behaviors that they thought would make them better parents when they got released from the facility. I think I speak for the committee to say that that it was a pretty impressive demonstration, and I think we were fairly pleased with what we saw. Any other questions? We'll let you go back to your busy work.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. Commissioner Carlson, do you want to come up? And then
we're in work session.
We are in work session. Well, I want to. They brought some people here. They want to hear this, and because it's a gut and stuff, and the amendments haven't really been testified to, I think it's appropriate that we take some testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Janet Carlson, Marion County Commissioner. I just wanted to come by and testify in support of this bill. Last session, I supported a bill, Senate Bill. Well, it turned out being Senate Bill 133. It started out being a House bill, and through another kind of interesting story that I won't bore you with, we put it in a Senate bill at the end, and it passed. This set up a planning and advisory committee to support strategies that will improve the lives of children of incarcerated parents, strengthening families, improving bonding. I think what we have found through research nationally and in Marion County is that children whose parents are incarcerated oftentimes end up back with those parents when those parents are released. And our policy in the past has been, in many cases, to ignore whether or not those who are in our prisons and jails actually even have children, and what happens to those children while their parents are incarcerated, and what we do to make a smooth transition for the children and their parents when they get back together. The research also shows that when we take the time and create the strategies, that families will stay together, that this intergenerational cycle of crime will be broken. And there were a number of other unintended consequences of this experiment that we've seen in the last couple of years at the Department of Corrections, but I'll allow the Department of Corrections to provide you with that information. In 1998, I was asked by Marion County to do a study of corrections family support, is what it was called. And what I've handed you is a copy of a feasibility study where I interviewed four different focus groups of men and women who were in the county jail, and found it fascinating to talk with them about their perspectives on parenting, about their own family situations growing up, about their attitudes toward the use of alcohol and drugs and tobacco, and whether or not those same attitudes were being brought forward to their children. And there's a lot of work that we can do with this regard. The Planning and Advisory Committee has had a great deal of success in the last 2 years, and I'm very much in favor of seeing that work continue in the upcoming 2 years and can come forward to you with even more accomplishments. So with that, I'll close and see if you have any questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. Are there questions for the Commissioner? We appreciate you continuing to work on this issue.
Thank you. Appreciate your time.
You bet. I'm going to go ahead and just take a brief recess on the bill on House Bill 2490. Colleagues, to try to accommodate Representative Avakian, who we want to allow to get back to his schedule. And with that in mind, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill. Help me out with the number. Here it is.
3193.
And I'll open that work session. We'll take your testimony, Representative Avakian, and then let you get back to business.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are you going to take mine and then recess out? I've got one other person to testify. Would you like her now?
Yeah, I thought we might recess out and then come back to it. Is that all right?
No, that's fine.
Okay.
That's fine. Thank you. And thank you very much for accommodating my schedule. Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 3193 is a bill which toughens the penalties for animal abuse in Oregon for certain types of animal abuse. You have before you also, which was just handed out, one amendment, excuse me, which we didn't receive until just shortly before your hearing, but it's a simple amendment, and I'll explain it to you in just a moment. The issue arose for me several years ago when a number of cat breeders and some people who were familiar with the trade of exotic animals came to me with a concern that there were large groups of animals at certain places breeders that were being abused, that were living in inhumane conditions, and that people were very much profiting by this. And so the bill is crafted to enhance the financial penalty for people who have eight or more animals on their premises when abuse occurs. Now, this really targets two groups of people. One, the people that are breeding animals in inhumane conditions for profit. The other, the collectors or the hoarders that you hear about oftentimes in the newspaper that might have 100 or 200 animals that are in horribly neglected circumstances. And the higher penalty, of course, is a deterrent. This is based on the existing animal abuse and neglect statutes. So there's no other standard that's introduced. It simply enhances the financial penalty. Also, because we're dealing with criminal offenses here, in the original statutes there are jail sentences imposed. This does not change any of those. It only enhances the financial penalties. With regard to the amendment, the original bill mistakenly stated that if there are eight or more animals present, then each animal that's present needs to be abused in order for this to kick in, which of course makes it a very untenable statute to apply if you've got 50 or 60 animals present and you need to prove an abuse of every single one of the animals. The amendment clarifies that you just need to have an animal abused in the presence of eight or more other animals. The eight animals being picked just so that we can get at those people who are dealing in larger quantities of animals, either in their commercial enterprise or in their hoarding of the animals.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative.
I don't see the amendments that Representative Avakian is talking about.
They're attached to his testimony, I believe.
They may be stapled.
Okay, I don't have his testimony, I guess.
Does everybody else have a copy of his testimony?
Yeah. It was on the dais this morning.
I have an extra copy. Thank you, Representative.
Are there questions for Representative Avakian? Representative Brzezinski.
Brad, I'm just looking at the summary as to what the different enhancements on the penalties are going to be. And I'm wondering if you could just explain to the committee the rationale for having really what I would call a blending of a sentence instead of having them designated like a Class A misdemeanor, which would give us a $5,000 fine or up to 1 year in jail. We basically have a Class B misdemeanor and a fine that's kind of in between a Class B and a Class A. Why we wouldn't want to just be uniformed and just have it either a B, which is 6 months jail, or if we want to have a higher fine, take it up to a Class A.
Mr. Chair, Representative Brzezinski, you certainly know more about the criminal code than I do, but as I understood it from legislative counsel, we were trying to get a doubling of the financial penalties without having to necessarily increase the jail sentence that went along with that. And it was the thought of that department that making these unclassified misdemeanors as opposed to just increasing the class of the misdemeanor was the best vehicle to do that.
Further discussion? Okay. Thank you very much, Representative Avakian. We appreciate it. We'll recess from the bill, but we'll come back to it later on the agenda today.
Very good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. So I'm now going to recess the public hearing the work session on House Bill 3193. I'm going to reopen and resume the work session on House Bill 2490, and we'll invite Claudia, your witnesses, to, if you want to bring them forward. And if whichever one of you wants to begin, if you just want to identify yourself for the record.
Okay, I'll start. My name is Diana Janowski. My husband is incarcerated at OSP. I've been working with Claudia and the Children of Incarcerated Parents Project for 2 years now. This project is wonderful. My children have benefited from the work that's come out of this project with the parenting class, with some of the changes in the visiting statuses at OSP, allowing for games and making it a little bit better for them to feel more comfortable and help with their father and learn how to communicate with them. And this is something that's very, very important that we continue holding not only us accountable, but Department of Corrections and other people and reporting back to you to help with the crime prevention. I mean, these kids need everything that we can do for them. They're forgotten by Department of Administrative Services, by everybody. They pretend like they don't exist, you know. So it's something that we really need to continue working on.
Okay, thank you. Well, go ahead and get your testimony, and then we'll open it up for questions.
Okay. Hi, my name is Melissa Garcia. I was just released from Coffee Creek April 4th. I was doing a one-year sentence there. And when I was there, I was seeing my son, and I took the parenting phase one and two, and I feel that it's really important that we do the programs in there, because if it wasn't in there, it would have took me a longer time to get my son back. And I would have to wait 3 months until I do the classes and do what they have to do. And now since I did that, I get my son on Friday out of CSD custody. So it's kind of easier for me and the women in there to bond with their children, because they're going to think that the children feel that you just left and they don't know where you're at. And if they bond with you in there, they know that you're still there and you still love them and stuff. So I feel that's important.
How old is your son, Melissa?
He is five.
He's five. And Diana, how old are your children?
16 and 12. I've been visiting for 11 years. So they were 4 and 8, I think, when we started.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Melissa, we were out at Coffee Creek earlier. You weren't in the group that we talked to, were you?
I did 6 panels, so I don't...
You don't remember either?
I don't remember.
That's fair. That's a fair... Anybody have questions for either Diana or Melissa? Yes, Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And your husband also is involved in the program, I assume, so that... that's a long time to be away, and so you're able to keep him in touch with the kids, and he's... I guess I should ask you, I don't know, is he learning parenting skills through this program as well, so that when he comes out he'll be able to?
He didn't unfortunately get to take the parenting class at this point, but he did work with Rex and the other inmates that they used to bounce the questions off and help set up the beginning classes. But he has taken some parenting classes in there and learned it. The benefit he got from helping them set up the class was to learn how to write letters, and because when the parents incarcerated, they can't do routine things that kids need to keep them involved. But this class teaches them how from there they can continue to keep that routine and be a part of their daily lives. And so he did benefit from the program in that way.
Good, thank you.
There are other questions? Any questions for Claudia while we've got her up here on the panel? And Claudia, essentially what this does is it simply makes the changes to the advisory committee, isn't that right?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. It does make those changes, and there are a few other little modifications, because as we got into the project and started working on it, we realized that it's more, it goes broader than children of incarcerated parents. It's children whose parents are involved in the criminal justice system. And Commissioner Carlson reminded me to mention that one of the unintended consequences that we found in the parent education classes is the level of disciplinary reports has gone down dramatically with the people who participate in the classes. So that the skills that people in prison are being taught in dealing with their children, they're using them in dealing with other people who are in prison as well as staff. So that's, we think, a real positive piece of it.
Okay. That's great. Any further questions? Is there anybody else you wanted to have come up?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. We appreciate you both taking the time to come here today. Is there anyone else here to talk about the -1 amendments to House Bill 2490? Okay. If not, Representative Przanski.
I move the -1s in the House Bill 2490.
Representative Przanski moves the -1 amendments into House Bill 2490. Is there discussion? Is there objection? The amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2490 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Przanski moves House Bill 2490 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. Is there discussion on that motion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Shetterly.
Only to acknowledge that I think this is my first gotten stuff of the session of one of my very own bills. But I'm pleased to have my name on this one, too. So
yeah, good.
It suits me just fine.
Good. And
wish
we,
I'd thought of it.
We acknowledged you. It was a much better idea than your original bill. And now you'll get all the credit for it.
That's right.
Okay. Nancy, call the roll.
Ackerman.
Aye.
Excuse.
Barker.
Aye.
Chanza.
Aye.
Rummel.
Aye.
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 Shetterly.
Aye. Aye. House Bill 2490 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. It has your name on it, Representative Shetterly. Do you want it or not?
It's okay. I'll probably be at the podium then.
Okay. Who would like to carry the bill? All right. Seeing no takers, I'll carry the bill.
All right.
All right, we're going to go back and reopen the work session on 3193. Representative Avakian indicated that there was someone else here to testify. Is that you, Ms. Harmon?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, come on forward, please. Thank you. Please begin.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Sharon Harmon. I'm the director of the Oregon Humane Society, and I'm really pleased to be here today to encourage you to support House Bill 3193. It is a sad truism today that we are seeing more and more cases of wholesale animal abuse involving large numbers of animals. Many of you remember certainly Vicki Kittles in her school bus with 119 animals. And then we have the most recent case in January 30th of the Erickson's in Malheur County. Over 500 dogs were removed from their property. Their conditions were so deplorable that a third of them had to be destroyed to end their suffering. The result of that case was a plea bargain that resulted in one count of criminal mischief and one count of animal neglect. And while it certainly may have been an expedient way to resolve a trial involving 534 victims, the end result is a very small fine that doesn't even begin to leave an impression, nor does it begin to compensate the organizations and the agencies that are empowered to deal with the case. I know our organization took in 77 of these dogs originally. In 1 month, veterinary costs alone hit $22,000. That doesn't include the cost of care, feeding, TLC, behavioral modification, and adoption. So it seems like any way that you can leave a more lasting impression on these people who perpetrate large-scale animal abuse, as well as make the fiscal penalty more meaningful, we certainly do support that. It doesn't make sense to go for 534 counts and prove that, although we certainly could have. We do appreciate the opportunity to leverage a higher penalty without clogging the court system. So I'm here today to ask you to support House Bill 3193.
All right. Are there questions for Ms. Harmon about this bill? Representative Przanski.
Ms. Harmon, I assume from what Representative Vakian said, the attempt to enhance the penalties and at the same time keeping the jail term at the same or the prison term, depending on if it's a felony or a misdemeanor, is to keep it under the radar screen, let's say, for what impact it may have on the prison or the jail systems.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Przanski, that's exactly the case. And the reality is animal cases certainly get passed along in lesser priority. And now, I was reading a statement regarding Measure 28, anything but people crimes are being put off. So animal crimes are further down the list. We'd rather, considering we have living sentient beings in our custody, but that's the political reality. And I think that certainly looking at fiscal penalty as a way to enhance the effect, we certainly support that.
Follow up?
Yes.
Based on your experience in doing this work and following these cases much closer than I have, are you finding that the judges are actually maxing out the current potential financial fine sentence level that they could be? From my practice, in areas with DUII, I don't even see them giving the full $5,000 fine, let alone maxing out any other type of misdemeanor cases.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Przanski, we're certainly seeing an increase in jail sentence coming down. Defendants are being meted out sentences of several months, which is heartening considering the magnitude of some of these crimes against animals. But in terms of financial penalty, no, they're not, and neither is restitution. You know, we'll see cases where we run tens of thousands of dollars to care for the animals, and the restitution is ordered at $700 that we rarely see.
Mr. Chair, if I can follow up.
You may.
To me, that's where I would like to start. It seems to me that your agency or the agencies you advocate for are the ones that are a lot of times curing the load, and it seems to me that the restitution is the area where we could actually get relief for those organizations. But it seems, from my following of some of these cases, the individuals that are actually the defendants are, I don't say they're destitute, but they probably don't have that much in the way of means that the court's even finding them with the ability to pay fine, let alone restitution. Is that not a decent summary as to what you see in these type of cases?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Przanski, we certainly see that with the Erickson's. They are impoverished, but not all people who abuse animals are without property. other means of support. I would not shy away from putting a lien on someone's property to do that. And while I appreciate your concern for the agencies, I guess my first preference would be to see that these people receive a punishment commensurate with their crime and an incentive not to repeat that crime.
Further questions? Counsel?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm looking at the amendments that are proposed, and they say, and the abuse takes place in the immediate presence of eight or more animals, including the victim. And, for example, on page one, it would say, if the person commits a crime of animal abuse, and the abuse takes place in the immediate presence of the eight or more animals, and above abuse, intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly causes physical injury to an animal. I'm just trying to, maybe this is a question for the witness. How do you prove this? I assume it would take some kind of evidence, like another person testifying. I assume that the mere fact that one animal is injured doesn't mean in of itself that the abuse took place in the presence of the other animals.
Mr. Taylor, I would love to be able to interview one of the witnesses, the other animals, but I'm not sure what that would get us. We certainly can prove that the other, in the original text of the bill, I'm satisfied that in many cases we have eight or more victims, and I am satisfied that we can prove abuse or neglect on these victims. As far as having another witness, that may prove problematic to prove that it was, and I'm not sure what bearing that would have.
Mr. Chair? Representative Sherrill.
Well, that is curious language. That immediate presence language sounds like it was borrowed from the child abuse statute. I'm not sure what bearing that has particularly, what immediate presence has to do. I mean, I understand the issue of eight or more where you're getting to somebody who's a collector or something like that, but the question of immediate presence, I know in the child abuse statute that's addressed because of the impact that witnessing abuse has on somebody who sees it. I don't know how that relates to what we're getting at here.
Mr. Chairman.
And what it means in the context of animal abuse, if they're all in separate cages, separate pens, kept in different rooms of the house, is that immediate presence? I don't know what that means.
Sure. The other thing, too, I would like to add, Mr. Chairman, Representative Shudley, and also an additional element to prove that it's going to be difficult.
Well, that's a good question, because it tracks, that language tracks through all the series of changes that the amendments purport to make to the bill. I think that, normally the abuse is evident by the status in which you have found the animals. So to the extent that you are now walking onto the premises with a search warrant or whatever else you have, you go up and you find these animals in horrible conditions, in cages or not in cages, whatever the situation may be. I'm not sure at that point it's going to be very hard to prove the element of it. I'm not sure what immediate presence adds. I grant you that. I also am not sure that it's going to be that much more difficult to prove given the evidence of the situation where they're all being kept together. Seems to me that wouldn't be that difficult of an element in most of the kinds of cases that we've heard about. But it's worth probably figuring out what that does to the bill. And if, in fact, it was just a legislative council borrowing of language from another section of the code, not taking into consideration that, it was animals and not people. Representative Przanski.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and maybe Ms. Harmon can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think what the attempt here is where you have eight or more animals together, they may not actually have the ability to prove the abuse on each and every one of the animals. But where you have one, it's almost like a super neglect that because one has been abused, you more than likely, because the other eight or more being present, are somehow not being attended to in that level. And it really comes back. I appreciate what the proponents want to do. I come back to the discussions we've had on many other bills in front of this committee about making different penalty levels. And it's very creative as to being able to get a physical that's going to pretty much be the same as to what the impact may be in the jails, but at the same time, or the prisons, it seems like, are we only fooling ourselves as compared to hopefully having the prosecutors be able to demonstrate why this particular case should get a higher sentence under the existing
thresholds of jail or fines instead of just putting another level in place. I'm having a hard time grasping how we take these different charts of class A, B, or C misdemeanors and felonies, and now we're going to have all the various, which we traditionally have had, unclassified, but we're going to have all these different levels of possible sanctions. And is there not another way that we can accomplish what the proponents want without having another overlay on our sentencing guidelines?
Do you want to respond to that, Ms. Harmon?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Przanski, it's almost like we're creating B-plus misdemeanors here.
Right.
I think the intent is to address hoarders and to address commercial enterprises that should be held to a higher standard when it comes to public trust of those that cannot speak for themselves. I can appreciate your difficulty in how to do this, but it is certainly a creative way to address how do you penalize within the scope of the crime in an appropriate manner without adding a burden to the jail system, which we're not likely to see anyway for an animal crime.
And I think you made the point, Ms. Harmon. I think that the at least the object was to grant some additional tools, at least on those where there were assets and there was a potential possibility for commercial gain. And in one of the cases involving, I think, in the materials, the Shar Pei dogs, where it was clear that they were being raised in horrible conditions, but with the intent that they were going to be sold, the increased financial penalties at least allows you to potentially get at the assets of people who are actually not just doing this because they've got a psychological problem, which some of these hoarders do, obviously, but to the people who are doing it simply as a means of also raising money. That was, I think, what was trying to be achieved. But I am still troubled primarily by that in the presence of language is still sort of got me confounded.
It's kind of ironic because if you look back in history, the first child abuse cases were actually covered under animal abuse. And that's how, in fact, I think it was New York State is where we first saw the history. And now it's kind of like almost evolved to the point where we're trying to borrow from the child abuse for the impact it may have going back to those who can't speak for themselves.
Yeah. All right. Are there more questions for Ms. Harmon? Yes, Representative Jensen.
I haven't heard Ms. Harmon speak to what the intent was of the immediate presence as the primary sponsor or authors of the bill here. I mean, do you have anything in mind with it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Jensen, these amendments were given to me at the start of this hearing by Representative Avakian's office. I think you'd have to ask him what his intent is. I believe in a short conversation I have with him, I don't think I can speak for him, but that he was addressing commercial enterprises primarily where you were holding them to a higher standard.
Why don't we just address commercial enterprises then and forget about this confusing language?
Well, and what I'm going to recommend we do, and we excuse Representative Avakian after he testified, but obviously with these questions, I think the best thing to do is probably to close the work session after we've taken anybody else's comments and give him an opportunity to address our questions and respond back to us, and assuming he can, we'll bring the bill back. Representative Przanski.
Today's Tuesday. Does the chair have a time frame? Because possibly what we could do, a few of us who have some interest in issues may talk to Representative Bakken. Maybe he can have whatever additional amendments drafted.
My recommendation would be that if we're going to do it, we need to do it this week.
Okay. If I could ask that it be put on for probably Friday?
Yeah, sure.
I'm not here Friday.
It's Thursday. It's district day.
Thursday would be fine.
Yeah, it'd need to be Thursday.
Yes, sir.
All right. Make it so. Make it so, Mr. Taylor. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wants to testify on 3193? All right. We'll close the work session on 3193. That's your script.
Thank you.
All right. We can do it.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I move the rules be suspended for the purposes of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 2094.
Representative Ackerman moves that the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 2094. The motion is undebatable. Those of the opinion that the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote will say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carries. The rules have been suspended. Representative Ackerman.
Mr. Chair, I move that we reconsider the vote by which House Bill 2094 was sent to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Representative Ackerman moves we reconsider the vote by which House Bill 2094 was sent to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation. Any discussion? Purpose of the motion, colleagues, is that there was a subsequent referral on the bill. I believe we're going to have some... Pete is going to come forward and put on the record that there's everyone agrees that there isn't going to be a fiscal impact that would require it to go to Ways and Means, and we're going to remove the Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Pete Shepard. I'm the Deputy Attorney General. In our judgment, there is no net fiscal impact to House Bill 2094 as amended. It does place upon the Department of Justice some additional administrative responsibilities, but at the same time it improves and enhances the enforcement tools that we're given, and as nearly as we can predict, it will be a net fiscal change of position due to passage of the bill.
Great.
We've so advised the Legislative Fiscal Office.
Right, and they have advised me as well, so thank you very much. So those are the opinion that we should reconsider the vote by which House Bill 2094 was sent to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation. We'll say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carries. Representative Ackerman.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 2094 be sent to the floor with a due pass as amended and subsequent referral to Ways and Means be rescinded.
Representative Ackerman moves that House Bill 2094 be sent to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation and that the subsequent referral to Ways and Means be rescinded. Discussion? Is there any objection? All right. The motion carries. Representative Ackerman will remain the carrier on the bill. All right. Colleagues, we are not going to do 2802. The parties who've been working on that reached a hallway agreement on some amendments, so we're going to hold that over, and we'll get those amendments, and so we'll see that bill back on Thursday, Mr. Taylor?
If you so wish it, Mr. Chair.
All right. Well, you just tell us when.
Was that movie on last night?
You tell us when we're there.
All day meeting.
And House Bill 3481. Is where we're at now. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3481, and I'm going to invite who's here to testify on that bill? Ms. Pellegrini, all right, that's a start.
Oh yeah.
Finally.
That looked like she was volunteering.
That's a start. Come on up, Cheryl. Have we called we're calling Representative Dalto's office. So you go ahead and come on up. We'll have him come and talk to us when he gets here. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Cheryl Pellegrini, Assistant Attorney General, Oregon Department of Justice, Consumer Protection, Financial Fraud. Mr. Chair, I just wanted to advise the members of the committee that we think that the House Bill 3481 is an excellent idea. There seem to be a number of issues related to identity theft that have been presented to the legislature this session. That certainly would benefit from such a task force. And I just also wanted to let the committee know that there has been, since May of 2002, a less formal, though organized, work group that was convened by the Department of Transportation, DMV. And that work group it met throughout the summer and fall. It developed an agenda, and it's ticking away several items on the agenda. And I guess I just wanted to offer up participation by any or all of that work group or the product of that work group's work to any task force that might be assembled by the legislature, just to avoid a duplication of efforts, and so that the task force convened by this bill might benefit from work that's already been done. the task force that, or the work group that I'm referring to. It's state and federal and civil and criminal law enforcement, state agencies, financial institutions, credit reporting agencies, and the private sector have been convened. And they include representatives of the Social Security Administration, Office of the Inspector General, the U.S. Attorney's Office, the Multnomah and Clackamas County District Attorney's Office, Oregon State Police, the Department of Justice, its Criminal Justice Division, as well as my section, the U.S. Postal Inspector, Oregon Associated Oregon Industries, the Oregon Bankers Association, Federal Trade Commission, and the Department of Human Services Center for Health Statistics. So those are the parties that have been meeting and have been working on the issue of identity theft.
Let me ask you, Cheryl, with that in mind, to the extent that that extremely broad interest group is working on a number of issues cooperatively that are related to identity theft, this task force, at least in its form originally in 3481, is considerably narrower. I mean, just based on the number of people that the appointing authorities would be allowed to appoint, it would require a much smaller, condensed group. And I'm wondering, I guess, and maybe you can tell me, other than the fact that this would sort of make a mandatory report to the legislature of some potential action that might necessarily be taken in the next legislative session, would there be a whole lot of value in getting a narrower group together when it sounds like such a broad interest group is already sort of in the process of doing a lot of this work without us having to tell them to do it?
Mr. Chair, that might be a question better answered by Representative Dalto. I honestly don't know that the representative was aware of this work group because it wasn't appointed by any state official, so it was
right. Just
sort of a, like I say, it was organized but not formal. So I don't know how much the representative knew about the existence or the work that the work group had done prior to introduction of House Bill 3481. I also don't know if the makeup of the task force contemplated by 3481 was, if it contemplates specific issues to be studied, which perhaps the larger group hasn't looked at this point. I just don't know.
Okay. Representative Shetler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think following up on yours, as I was hearing Ms. Pellegrini comment on this, it occurred to me that looking at the fiscal impact and the referral that I assume is on this bill to Ways and Means, I was suggesting that she not disband that group in the meantime in anticipation of this group taking over. So it's good to hear that you've got something that's already in place and ongoing. I'd keep it up.
Mr. Chair, Representative Shetterly, it's actually DMV that convened it. We're willing participants and probably will continue.
If the work group, and this is the one area where I sometimes think there's the possibility of a disconnect, but if the work group that you've referred to wanted to produce legislation or recommend legislation, what's the mechanism? Would it simply require that if DOJ thought it was a good idea, that you would run it through your process? If DMV thought it was a good idea, they would run it through their process. If the DAs thought it was a good idea, they would run it. I mean, is there an effort for this work group to coordinate sort of, you know, an end product on a particular issue they've been looking at to say, okay, and here's who's going to take the lead in carrying a piece of legislation to the next legislative session or a recommendation on identity theft issues? Or is it left to each of the individual participants to decide to work it?
Mr. Chair, good question. That was a topic of one whole session's discussion among the group. And because it's sort of a loosely knit and not formally convened, the group felt that it really didn't have standing to produce anything that could be said to be supported by everyone. Having said that, I think that there is one piece of legislation this session, Senate Bill 52. It would create the crime of aggravated identity theft. And that is a concept that was discussed by the work group and that did have the support of, I would say, most of the members of the work group, including a number of members representing private sector interests. Other than that, there was some legislation that the Attorney General introduced that did not have the support of all of the members of the work group.
Okay. Representative Krasanski.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, a couple of things. I know that in our general government, Representative Krummel and I have seen a couple of different pieces dealing with components or parts of identity theft for public employees, including photographs being available and stuff like that. I'm wondering if the chair would think maybe if we don't have the ability to do a task force because of the financial, if somehow the interim judiciary could empower this task group that's already working, have them report back before, and we could actually introduce whatever they may have that we think is appropriate prior to the next session.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't think that's a bad idea, recognizing that, you know, the request from the Interim Judiciary Committee to sort of work with us and to report back to us is voluntary, and that none of those participants, if they don't like the direction it's going, they can simply jump off and not play. But again, I think given the realities of the financial situation which we're in, we could easily send this down as a feel-good move to Ways and Means, but I think it's pretty clear that it wouldn't go anywhere once it got there. And to the extent that there's a broader group than this bill initially assumed that includes all of the relevant or a strong group of the relevant participants, it seems sort of silly to create a task force to do what a group of people voluntarily have come together and started to do anyway. So I guess my approach would be to sort of, as a favor to the legislature and the Interim Judiciary Committee, ask them if they would be willing, maybe at an Interim Judiciary Committee meeting somewhere, you know, midway through the interim, to come in and give us a report on sort of what they've been doing and what kind of suggestions and where they think we could be helpful in addressing these issues. That would be, I think, the approach that I'd sort of recommend. Any additional thoughts, discussions, questions from Ms. Pellegrini? Thanks for coming up, Cheryl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We appreciate the time.
Stepping forward. Anybody else here on 3481? What are all you people doing here then? My God. All right. I'm going to close the work session on 3481. And unless I'm missing something, I am working off of revision number 2 of our agenda today. We've moved out 2094 back to the floor, having taken off the Ways and Means referral. We've moved 2490 to the floor. We're holding over 2802 while the parties work out their amendments. We had a hearing on 3193, or a work session, and we have questions about those amendments, and we just finished 3481. Those are the bills I'm doing today. Council?
No, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, tomorrow is going to be a long day, and so is Thursday.
So we're letting you off early today. Breathe deep. We've got double floor session tomorrow, and we got double judiciary tomorrow. So it is a long day. Have a good dinner and a good night's sleep tonight, everybody. All right, we're adjourned for the afternoon.
Other than that, we shall...